On Kuf Yadalad Amud Aleph, we're up to the two dots on the seventh line of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Tashma, Ovid Kochavim Shebal Lechabos, Ein Omrim Lo Kavav Yal Tichbe, Vipnei She'ein Shvisaso Aleihem, Kadana Bal Lechabos, Omrim Lo Al Tichbe She'Shvisaso Aleihem. So this again goes back to the point that we just ended off with yesterday, discussing the question of if a katan goes ahead and does an avera, am I obligated to stop him? So the Gemara now brings a proof text based on a sugya that appears in Masechet Shabbos about putting out fires on Shabbos. Now this sugya really is very theoretical because as we pointed out way back in Masechet Shabbos, Bezman Hazeh, when a fire breaks out on Shabbos, we automatically deem that to be pikuach nefesh and you do whatever you need to put the fire out. But Bezman Gemara, it wasn't often considered that way because the houses weren't grouped so closely together. It was really typically more just considered to be a question of loss of property. So either way, the Gemara says that, let's say, for example, a fire broke out in your house on Shabbos, and again, it wasn't a scenario of pikuach nefesh, so a non-Jew comes by to start putting out the fire, so the Gemara says you're not obligated to tell him to put out the fire, to stop putting out the fire, let him do whatever he wants, because you're not obligated to make sure that the non-Jew keeps Shabbos. In contrast, if a katan comes along and tries to extinguish the fire, the Gemara says then you have to stop it, because again, you're obligated to make sure that he keeps Shabbos. So this Gemara seems to indicate that you do have to stop a katan from, potentially violating an avera. So the Gemara says, no. Rabbi Yochanan ba'usal das aviv. No, maybe you can argue that the only time that you have to stop the katan is when he's clearly doing it at the behest of his father. In other words, even if his father didn't specifically tell him to put the fire out, if let's say it's the person's own kid who's extinguishing the flames, it's pretty obvious that the father is going to be happy with that. But one could argue that if a random katan comes in who's not related to the person whose house is on fire, maybe you're not obligated to stop him. So the Gemara then asks, dichvasei gabe ove kochavim da'usal das yisrael. So the Gemara then pushes back. Well, what about in a parallel case? What if the non-Jew came and it was obvious that the non-Jew was doing it at your behest? Again, whether you specifically told him or whether, he was a good friend or whatever it was, the non-Jew knew that it would be in your best interest for him to put the fire out. So is that going to be permissible? So the Gemara says no. The assumption is that when a non-Jew puts the fire out, he's doing it for his own benefit because he thinks that there's going to be something in it for him. Maybe he'll be able to salvage some possessions. Maybe he'll pay him off afterwards. In other words, he's not really doing it for you. He's really more doing it for himself, which is going to obviously be fine on Shabbos. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Tashma, Ben Chaver Sheragil Leilich Eitzel Avi Imo Ama Aretz, Ein Choshesh In Shema Yachilenu Dvarim She'ena Mesukanim, Matza Biyado Peros Ein Zakaglo. So comes the Gemara and quotes a Tosefta that appears in Maseches Demai that talks about the following case. Let's say you have a person who's a Chaver, he's Makbid on separating Trumos and Maestros, and he goes to his grandfather who's not that way. His grandfather's an Ama Aretz, he's not Makbid on separating Trumos and Maestros. So first of all, the Gemara tells us that we don't have to be concerned that the grandfather is going to feed him food that Trumos and Maestros are not separated. That point is kind of more tangential. But then the Gemara says, let's say the grandchild walks out of the grandfather's house with some fruit, you don't have to force him to separate Trumos and Maestros. So there's at least a concern that the produce he has is Tevel, and yet we're not insisting that this 10-year-old grandkid has to separate Trumos and Maestros. So the Gemara says, no. Amar Rabbi Yochanan b'demai hekilu. This was a special leniency that was instituted by Chazal, specifically by Demai, right? Demai is produce where there's a suffix, where you're not 100% sure if the person separated Trumos and Maestros. The Mishnah tells us in Maseches Demai that Rov Ameh Haaretz Ma'asr, meaning that the majority of people, even if they technically qualify as Ameh Haaretz, they probably do separate. Maestros was just a Chumra Mid Rabbanan that we insist that you take it off again as Demai, just to be 100% sure. So the Gemara says, Ela Taima De Demai, Havadai Ba'ala Asure. The implication is that the only reason why Chazal were lenient here is because this is Demai. What if the produce was Vadai Tevel? What if I knew for a fact that the produce was Tevel, that Trumos and Maestros were not separated? The implication clearly is that the grandchild, that in other words, that we would be obligated to make sure that Trumos and Maestros were separated from it. The problem is, the Ha'amar Rabbi Yochanan ba'usal das aviv. Didn't Rabbi Yochanan tell us earlier in the Gemara regarding the case of extinguishing the fire on Shabbos that it's only a problem when it's done at the behest of the father? So here, there's nothing being done at the behest of the grandfather. It's not like the grandfather is trying to convince him to eat Tevel. The kid just took the produce out of the grandfather's house. Again, presumably we think that Trumos and Maestros were not separated because the grandfather is an Ama Aretz. So the Gemara says, so why all of a sudden here are we insisting that you have to separate Trumos and Maestros? So the Gemara says, you're right. Elo Rabbi Yochanan sapuke misapkele kai hachamanche kai hachamanche. Basically, Rabbi Yochanan was unsure of the he was unsure of the din. In other words, he didn't know if when I see a katan doing an avera, am I obligated to intercede, to get involved, and to make sure he doesn't do it. So essentially, Rabbi Yochanan was kind of hedging his bets in both directions and was being machmir both directions. But again, he didn't really know what the halacha was. Okay, then the Gemara says Tashma ben Chaver Kohen Sharagel Lelech Eitzel Aviimo Kohen Amaretz in Choshish and Shema Yachila Nutruma Temea Matza Biado Peros and Zakaglo. So this is basically the exact same as the previous case. The only difference in the second scenario is that the grandchild and the grandfather are both Kohanim, and instead of dealing with Tevel and the question of separating Trumos and Maestros, the issue at hand is whether we have to be concerned that the grandfather is going to either purposely or accidentally feed his grandchild Tame Truma. That's the question at hand. So the Gemara says, again, if I see the grandchild walking out with Truma from the grandfather's house, I don't have to stop him. I don't have to go and make sure that the produce is tar. So the Gemara says, no, that's not a proof, but Truma Durabanan. Perhaps we're only discussing Truma Midurabanan, which again we've spoken about in the past, how Mida Oraisa, Truma only must be separated from grain, wine, and oil. Midurabanan, it also extends to fruits and vegetables and things like that. So the Gemara says, one could argue that the only time we don't have to intercede and make sure that the grandchild has Tahar Truma, that's only maybe by Truma Durabanan. But perhaps if he had Truma de Oraisa, perhaps we would insist, we wouldn't have to go out of our way to make sure that the Truma was in fact Tahar. Okay, then the Gemara says, Tashma, Yonik Tinok Vaholech Me Overes Kochavim Umi Behema Temea, Vein Choshishin Bionik Shaket, Velo Yachilenu Nevelos Utrefos Shkatsim Urimasim, Umikulan Yonik Mehem Vaafilu Bishabis, Uve Gadol Aser, Abashol Omer Noagin Hayinu She Yonke Mi Behema Tahora Biyanta. So comes the Gemara with the following machlokes about the following issue. Let's say you have a young child, you have a baby. So the Gemara tells us that a baby is allowed to nurse from a non-Jewish woman and even directly from a non-kosher animal, and we're not concerned for what's called yonik sheketz. Yonik sheketz means typically you're not allowed to drink the milk or nurse, in other words, almost in this case, literally nurse from a non-kosher animal, but that is not a concern when it comes to a baby. However, the Gemara says you are not allowed to feed him or to have him eat, you know, basically anything which is non-kosher, whether that's, you know, a nevela, whether it's a trefa, whether it's an insect, whatever it is. However, the Gemara says that in all of these scenarios, the baby is permitted to nurse from the animal, from the non-Jewish woman, again, whatever the scenario is, even on Shabbos. But if the person is already a gadol, if they're no longer, for these purposes, we'll say under bar mitzvah, so then they're not allowed to. And then Abba Shol says that our minag was, that the practice was, that we used to nurse from tahor, from kosher animals on yontif. So the Gemara says, okay, what's the point of this whole discussion here? Katani mia, ein choshesh in biyonek sheket. The Gemara says, clearly, we're not concerned if the child is nursing from a non-kosher animal. So again, by all normal standards, eating or drinking the milk of a non-kosher animal is of course problematic, and yet if the baby is doing it, we're not going to stop them. So the Gemara says, no, that's not a proof either. Hasam yishum sakana. The reason why we allow a baby to nurse from a non-kosher animal or a non-Jewish woman, whatever the case is because it's because otherwise it's a sakana. The obvious assumption is the baby doesn't have access to milk any other way, so obviously it's going to be a sakana if the baby doesn't get milk. So the obvious question then is, yihachi gadol nami, what about someone who's a gadol? So the Gemara says, no, gadol by umdina. You can't just allow a gadol, and again, for these purposes, we're going to translate a gadol to mean someone over bar mitzvah. You can't just allow them to nurse from an animal, you know, willy-nilly. You have to do some kind of evaluation. You have to see, okay, is this person really sick enough that they really need this animal milk? So the Gemara says, okay, katanami li by umdina. Why don't we require the same evaluation for a katan? So the Gemara says, no, amar ravuna berei de Rav Yehoshua, stam tinok misukan eitzel chalav, because the assumption is that babies need milk, and if a baby doesn't get milk in a timely fashion, it's automatically considered dangerous, and therefore no further assessments are required. Okay, Billy, your question?
Rabbi, I understand milk from an unkosher animal, definition unkosher. Right. Know that.
Yeah, so it's an interesting, yeah, it's almost kind of thrown in parenthetically here because the Gemara is really more focusing on the animal discussion. There is a famous comment of the Rama about whether it's permissible to nurse from a non-Jewish woman, you know, in certain extenuating circumstances. Again, the question becomes, do we assume that, you know, because, you know, obviously, usually the food that a person eats gets into their milk. So they're eating non-kosher food. Is that going to get into the milk? That point is kind of more tangential to the Gemara. The Gemara kind of almost has that as like a throwaway line. The primary part of this Gemara more focuses on nursing from non-kosher animals. That's the focus. But yeah. Okay. Then we said, Abba Shol, Omer Noagin Ayinu Sheyonkim Yibahimator B'yantif, right? That was the opinion of Abba Shol was that they're practice was that they would nurse from kosher animals on Yantif. So the Gemara asks, hey Chidami, what's the case here? Idi ika sakana afilu b'shabes nami, idi leka sakana afilu b'yantif aser. In other words, b'manavshach. If there's sakana involved here, then it should even be permissible to nurse from the animal on Shabbos. And if there's no sakana involved, then why is it even permissible to nurse from the animal on Yantif? So the Gemara says, no, lo tzricha di ika tzara, because savar mefarik kila achar yadhu, Shabbos to iser skila gazru rabbanan, Yantif to iser lavlo gazru be rabbanan. The Gemara says very simply that the scenario was it wasn't life or death. It wasn't that the person, the child, whoever it was, desperately needed the milk, but if they didn't get the milk, they were going to be thirsty, they were going to be in pain. It was a little bit of tzar. So the Gemara says that, in other words, what exactly is wrong in general with milking an animal on Shabbos or Yantif? So that's a violation of what's called mefarik. Mefarik basically means that you're separating something edible from something inedible. It's a tolda of dush. It's considered like a subcategory of threshing. However, this is clearly done with the shinui. Normal people don't, stick their mouth on the udder of an animal and usually milk the cow and then drink the milk. So this is clearly done with the shinui. So when it comes to Shabbos, where the punishment for violating Shabbos b'mezid is skila, so Chazal are going to still impose a gzera even though this is done with the shinui. Again, if it's not pikuach nefesh, obviously. But by Yantif, where the whole iser to begin with violating Yantif is only an iser lav, so Chazal said because there's some tzar involved, the person is very thirsty, we're going to allow it. Again, if it's real pikuach nefesh, the person mamish needs the milk, otherwise they're going to die. Then even on Shabbos, you're allowed to do that. But if it's just tzar, they just need it because they're a little bit thirsty. So then that heter will only extend to Yantif and not to Shabbos. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Tashma, lo so chilom ki sheket same, lo sachilom lahazir hagdolim alaktanim. My lav de amr lahu lo so chlu, lo de lo lisru le biadayim. So again, the Gemara is trying to prove one way or another whether I have to stop a katan from doing an avera. So the Gemara says, a pasuk from Parsha Shmini that talks about the prohibition against eating various types of insects. So the Torah uses the word lo sochelum. So the Gemara interprets the word lo sochelum as if it said lo sachilum. Don't feed it to them. Don't feed insects to a katan. So the Gemara says, you see from here that a gadol is not allowed to feed them to a katan. So the Gemara says, doesn't that mean to tell me that, even if I see a katan eating the insects, I have to stop them? The Gemara says, no. All it means is that I can't actively feed the insects to a katan, but if I see the katan eating the shkatzim urimasim, I'm not obligated to stop it. Then the Gemara says, Tashma, kol nefesh mikem lo sochal dam lahazir agdolim alaktanim, my lav damri lahu lo sochlu, lo de lo lisu lubia diamond. Almost an identical drusha regarding the prohibition against eating blood. So the Gemara says, again, I might have thought that if I see a katan eating blood, I have to stop him. So no, kamash malan, that I only can't actively feed him the blood, but if he's eating the blood on his own, I don't have to stop him. And then finally, the Gemara says, Tashma, emor ve'amarta, lahazri gdolim alaktanim, I love, de'amar lehu lositamu, lo, de'lolitamu lehu biyadayim. The Gemara has, again, a third drusha regarding the halacha that a kohen is not allowed to become metami lames except for his seven relatives. So the Gemara, again, thinks that if I see a kohen katan become Tummy Lemes, I might have thought I have to stop him. The Gemara says, no, I can't actively make him Tummy Lemes, but if he's doing it on his own, I don't have to stop him. So why does the Gemara have to quote all three of these halachas? The Gemara says, Utsuriche, Diash Me'in and Shkatzim, Mishim Di Isurim Bemashihu, Avaldam Da Adiika Revia Seimalo. So on the one hand, I could have argued that the prohibition against eating Shkatzim Muramasim, one violates that Isur, even if they eat a Mashu, even a tiny amount, provided that it's at least considered a whole creature. It could be less than a Kezias, it could be less than the normal Shiurim that we're used to thinking of when it comes to certain types of punishments, as long as it's considered an entire creature, even if it's very, very small, I'm still going to be chayav malchus for that. On the other hand, when it comes to the prohibition of dam, one does not violate the issue of dam, or at least get punished for eating dam until you consume at least a revias of dam. And then the Gemara says, v'yashmin and dam, mishrim di'ika kares, ava shratzim emalo. On the other hand, the prohibition against eating blood is a chi of kares, whereas the issue against eating shratzim is only a regular lav. V'yashmin and hani tarte, mishrim di'isur and shem abakol, aval tuma emalo. On the other hand, the issue of shratzim and dam are universally surim, whereas the prohibition against becoming tummy lames is only unique to kohanim. V'yashmina tumah kohanim shayni mishum deriba b'hen mitzvos yaseros avalhane imalo tzricha. And on the other hand, if we only mention the halacha of the katan becoming tummy, I could have argued that kohanim are different because they have more mitzvos, they have more kedusha. But when it comes to the prohibitions of shratzim and dam, so one could have argued that maybe if I see a katan eating a sheretz or a dam, maybe I don't have to stop him. So the Gemara says no, kamash malan. That again, that's why the Gemara has to mention all three of these halachas. Okay, then the Gemara says tashma shnei. This goes back to the mission that we started the parak with, where the mission said, if I have two brothers, one is competent, one is a deaf mute, they marry two sisters, both of whom are competent, and then the deaf mute brother dies, so what should the competent brother do? So basically, the surviving sister, in other words, the one who outlived the cheresh, she is going to be off the hook because of the issur of achos isha. There is no yibum in this scenario because of the prohibition of achos isha, since the Pikeach's wife is the sister of the is the sister of the wife of the Chirish. Meis Pikeach Bal Pikachas, Ma Yasa Chirish Bal Pikachas, Motzi Es Ishto Beged Ve'Eishes Achiv Asru Liolam. And again, the reverse, as we also pointed out in the Mishnah the other day, is that if, let's say, the Pikeach brother dies, so then the Chirish has to divorce his wife because the marriage wasn't really binding me to Oraisa in the first place because he was a Chirish, but then he's also not allowed to do Yibum with his sister-in-law because of the prohibition of Eishes Achiv. So the Gemara then asks, Amai Motzi Es Ishto Beged Tesev Gabe Katanochal Nevelosu. The Gemara says, hang on one second. Why are we insisting in the case of the Chirish that he has to divorce his wife and then he can't do Yibum with his sister-in-law? Why can't they just remain married and it will be the same concept as a Katan Ochal Nevelos? The same way that if I see a Katan eating Nevela, I see a Katan eating Dam, Shratzim, whatever the case was, I don't have to stop him from doing it. So the Chirish presumably would fall under that same rubric. Why do I have to stop them from doing what they do? And again, the Gemara is not necessarily justifying what they're doing, but the Gemara is saying, why do we Dafka insist that he has to get divorced? Let them stay married and we can't do anything about it. So the Gemara says, okay, but Mishum Yisura Dida. So you're right. From his perspective, we don't do anything, but from her perspective, she's a Pikachas, so she will not be permitted to remain married because now of the Zika bond that's created with her sister. So then the Gemara tries again. Tashma. Shnei Achin Pikchin Nesu and Shtei Achayos. Achas Pikachas V'Achas Charesha. So in this case, I have two competent brothers who marry two sisters. One's a Pikachas, one's a Charesha's. Meis Pikach Bal Charesha's. Ma Yasa Pikach Bal Pikachas. Teitzei Mishum Achos Isha. Meis Pikach Bal Pikachas. Ma Yasa Pikach Bal Charesha's. Motzi Es Ishto Beged Ve'Eishes Achiv Bachaliza. So again, the same scenarios that we mentioned before. So in a case where the Pikach, who's married to the Pikachas, dies, so then she just goes off scot-free as Achos Isha because the Chirish can't do Yibum. If it's the other way around, if it's the Pikach who died, the one who was married to the Chareshes, so then he's going to have to divorce his wife, and then Eishes Achiv, his sister-in-law, is going to require chalitza. And the question is, V'yamai motzi es ishto beget? Tesev gabei katan ochal nevelosu. The same question. Why are we insisting on it? Again, why can't they just remain married? So the Gemara says, again, Mishum Yisura Didei. In this scenario, since he's the pikeach, so it's going to be a problem for him. So again, whichever way you turn, there's going to be some kind of an isser that's going to apply either to the man or the woman, depending on who is the chayrish in this scenario. Then the Gemara says, Amar Rava, Tashma, Shnei Achin, Echad Chayrish Ve'Echad Pikeach, Nesuin L'Shteach Hayos Achas Pikachas V'Achas Charesha. So again, you have two brothers. One's a Chirish, one's a Pikach. They marry two sisters. One's a Pikachas, one's a Chareshes. Meis Chirish Bal Chareshes, Ma Yasa Pikach Bal Pikachas, Teitzei Mishum Achos Ishto. Meis Pikach Bal Pikachas, Ma Yasa Chirish Bal Chareshes, Motzi Es Ishto Beged, Ve'Eishes Achiv Asru Liolam. So again, the same scenarios we keep on pointing out here. So in a case where the Chirish who's married to the Chareshes dies, so then the Pikach who's married to the Pikachas, so she goes off scot free because of Achos Isha, because she's the sister of the surviving wife. On the other hand, if the Pikach, who's married to the Pikachas, dies, so then the Chirish has to divorce his wife, but again, he also cannot do Yibum with his sister-in-law. So the Gemara asks, in this scenario, there's no Isser on either party here, because the Chirish married the Chareshes, and the Pikach married the Pikachas, and yet we're still insisting in this case that the Chirish has to go ahead and divorce his wife, even though there's no prohibition applying to the other party. So the Gemara says, no, Amar Rav Shmai Egzir Mishum Hataras Yavam Alashuk. The reason why we insist on a get here is because otherwise we're afraid if we allow the Chirish and the Chareshes to remain married, people are not going to realize that the reason why we're letting them stay married is because he's, you know, the halachic equivalent of a katan, and we're just not going to, you know, intercede and get involved. They may think that the kiddushin, that the entirety of the kiddushin was done away with, and that now there's a heter for the yavama to go get married even before she does even more chalitz, which of course, you know, is an isser de oraisa. So that people don't get confused and don't think that you can just go, that the woman can go off scot free and marry whoever she wants without first doing Yibam or Chalitza. In order to avoid that possibility, we insist that a get is given here as well. Okay, Hadron Allah Chirish. Says the Mishnah, Ha'isha Shaholcha Hiu Vailalim Dinas Hayan. So again, a woman and her husband travel overseas. Shalom Beino Levena V'Shalom Ba'olam. And there's peace between them. There's no fighting between them. There's peace in the world. Uva V'Amra Meis Ba'ali Tinasei Meis Ba'ali Tisei. She comes back and she says, my husband died, so she can either get remarried or do Yibam again, depending on the scenario. Shalom Beino Levena U'Milchama Ba'olam However, if there's either fighting between them, or even if there's peace between them, but there's a war going on in the world, and then she claims that her husband died, then we don't believe her. However, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says we never believe her when she says that her husband died, unless she comes into Bezdin, you know, crying and her clothing are torn, and it's clear that she's an Avelas, so then we can believe her. And then the Rabbanan respond that that in that in both scenarios she can get remarried. In other words, whether she comes in with her, you know, crying and her garments torn or not, the Rabbanan say either way she can get remarried. Okay, so the Gemara explains Tana Shalom Beinu Levena Mishum Dekabayla Misnik Tata Beinu Levena Tana Shalom Ba'olam Mishum Dekabayla Misnik Melchama Ba'olam. So the Gemara just points out textually that the reason why the Mishnah had to specify, you know, cases where there's peace in the world or there's peace between the husband and wife is just to kind of contrast that with the case where there's not peace in the world or where there's not peace between the husband and wife. Amar Rava, my time of demochama, what's the reason why if they, let's say they travel and there was a war going on that we don't believe her when she says her husband died, mishum da'amra b'dedame, we're afraid that the wife is going to mistakenly come up with the following rationalization. Salka da'itach b'cholhani de'iktol hupalit, because she's going to reason, she said, listen, I saw a whole bunch of people get killed, you know, as part of this battle, so there's no way that my husband survived. It's clear that he died, but maybe she, in other words, as long as she didn't really see her husband die, you know, outright, so we don't know 100% that he actually died. Then the Gemara says, "Imtin shalomar kevin deshalom beinu levena natra dechazia." And even if you wanted to argue, well, there's peace between the husband and wife, so maybe she would care enough to wait around to, you know, really figure out 100% if her husband was really killed. But zimnin demachule begira o beromcha the savra vade meis viika de avat samtari v'chaya. But in other words, there could be extenuating circumstances that are not her fault. For example, let's say she sees her husband get shot by an arrow, by a spear, and she just assumes that her husband died, but then miraculously someone came along and found a tourniquet and stopped the bleeding, and he survived. So the wife wasn't expected to know that. She assumed her husband died. She wasn't being malicious about it. She just thought the husband died. So the Gemara then is...
Rabbi, we've said in the past, I think when there was a single witness... And the woman would be so careful.
That's different. Because those cases, the Gemara never introduced this factor of war. This is a totally different issue. Those cases is, you know, we just have to figure out, is the woman lying or not? Does she want to, you know, is it going to be to her detriment if she ends up lying and she's going to ruin her, she's going to end up violating Lusinov and have Mamzerim? That's just a normal case. That's a normal, regular case. Once you throw these other factors in, once you throw in Milchama and fighting between the husband and wife, then you have to contend with all these other issues. And that's going to be part of the Gemara's whole discussion. I was trying to figure out, you know, how do we treat all these other scenarios like war, like famine, like all these things? You know, what rubric do they fall under? Essentially, that's going to be part of the Gemara's discussion. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Sama Rava leMeimer Ra'avon Eino Kemelchama Dela Amra B'Dedame." So Rava initially thought that we do not treat a famine like a war. In other words, the assumption being that as opposed to a case of a melchama where we said that the woman might rationalize and think that, oh, there's no way my husband survived, or she saw her husband get, you know, stabbed by with a sword or whatever, and there's no way that he survived that. When it comes to a famine, so she's not going to make those same claims, and she's going to assume that her husband might have survived. So the Gemara then says, "No, Hadara Marava Ravon Hareyu Kemochama Dahida Asas Lekame Derava Amrle Bali Meis Berav Amrle Shaper Avanet DeShezat Nafshich Sal Kedaitach DeVehahu Purta DeNafafisa DeShavakt LeHava Chaye." So Amrle Mar Nami Yada DeChiay Gavna LeChaye. So the Gemara basically says like this: the Rava eventually retracted his position, and he actually thought that a famine is exactly like a Mochama. Why was that? So basically, some woman came before Rava and claimed that her husband died during a famine. So Rava turns to her and says, "What, did you just like run away from him? Like, you know, in other words, how do you know that he died? Like, in other words, what are you doing here without him?" So the Gemara then says, in other words, Rava said, maybe you could have revived him. You could have gotten some, some flour, some sifted flour that you could have given to him. You could have revived him. And the woman turns around and says to Rava, you also know that that wouldn't have helped. In other words, he was already gone. He was already too far gone from the famine that there was no way to revive him. So Rava said, you see from here that even during famine, people are rationalizing. They're saying, well, you know, the flour probably wouldn't have done anything. You know, my husband's probably dead. Then the Gemara takes it even further. Hadara marava Rava griya mi milcha. The ilu milchama kiyamra meis bali b'milchama hu dela mehimna hamesa mitasu mehimna the ilu gabei ra'avona da amra meis ukvartiv. Then Rava took it even a step further and said that famine is even worse than milchama. In other words, the woman has even less credibility. Why? Because when it comes to milchama, so yes, it's true that a woman is not believed to say that her husband was killed during wartime because maybe there's a slight chance that he survived. But let's say the woman says my husband died naturally. It happens to be there's a war going on in the world, but he happened to just die naturally. So then we do believe her. But during a time of famine, the Gemara says, the only time you can believe a woman when she says that her husband died is if she says he died and I buried him, because there she really says in other words, there it's clear that she's giving that testimony that her husband not only died but she actually put his body in the ground. Then the Gemara says mapoles harehu kemochama. Then the Gemara says when it comes to a building collapsing, people being buried under the rubble, we treat that in terms of the woman's credibility like a war. De amra b'dedame, because again we have that same rationalization. The woman says, oh no, my husband probably died under the rubble, but again not 100%. Then the Gemara says, Shiluach nechashim ba'akrabim harehim kamochama da'amar b'dedame. Then the Gemara says, when it comes to plagues of snakes and scorpions, so it's the same thing. We treat it like a mochama, because again, the woman says, well, he probably died. He probably got bit by a snake or a scorpion, but again, we're not 100% sure. Then the Gemara says, dever amrila harehim kamochama va'amrila eno kamochama. Then the Gemara has two versions, has a machlokas. What about dever? What about when there's a pestilence affecting animals that's killing animals? Is that treated like a mochama? So the Gemara explains, amrila harehim kamochama da'amar b'dedame. Va'amrila eno kamochama de'samchea da'amar inche. So on the one hand, you could just argue that, yeah, that we treat pestilence like it's wartime because she's going to make the same rationalizations. On the other hand, you could argue that maybe pestilence is somehow different because of the saying that people would say that 7 years have gone by with this pestilence, with all these animals dying, but there are still people walking around. In other words, basically, the Gemara's point is that sometimes people find creative ways to survive even in a very intense and extreme situation. So it's not 100% of a given that the person is going to die. Then the Gemara says, "Ibay elu hechazika hi mochama ba'olam mahu mi amrinan malo l'shaker the ibaya amra shalom ba'olam odil makemen the ichaska amra b'dedame v'la'asei mali l'shaker umara cheskase." So the Gemara has the following question. The Gemara says, "Let's say the woman comes along, and you know we don't have newspapers and we don't have 24-hour news cycles. So back in the times of the Gemara, if there was a war going on halfway across the world, people here would probably not know about it at least for a very long time. So the woman comes into Beis Din and she says, there's a milchama going on halfway across the world. So we didn't know that before. She just told us out of the blue there's a milchama going on. So that automatically should seemingly, should actually lessen her credibility a little bit, because as we pointed out before, a woman is not typically believed, at least in normal circumstances, to say that her husband was killed during a milchama. So the question now is, well, do we now believe the woman when she turns around and tells us, not only is there a milchama, but my husband was killed? Because the woman could have just as easily said, well, there's no milchama going on in the world, because there's no way that we could have checked that. There's no way that we could have known that. She's the one giving us the information in the first place. This is like a general question that comes up throughout Shas called Pesha Asar Pesha Hiter. In other words, she was the one who told us in the first place that there's a war going on. So the same person who told us that, so maybe we should give her credibility when she says that her husband was killed, or maybe no. Once she admitted there's a war going on, she now loses any further credibility for anything that she's going to say subsequently. That's the Gemara's question. So the Gemara says, Tashma, Ishinu Aleinu Bayis, Ishinu Aleinu Ma'ara, Hu Meis Va'ani Nitzalti Eino Ne'emenes. The Gemara tries to answer this question with a price. So it says, let's say a woman comes along and says, our house or our cave caught fire and there was smoke everywhere and my husband died but I survived, so we don't believe her. So the Gemara says, presumably, so you see from the fact that we're not lending her any credibility here, so we again, she's the one who's informing us of all this information in the first place and we're still not believing her. So the Gemara says, no, that's not a raya. Shiny hasam da amar la ki hechi de lididach es rachish nisa, lididay nami es rachish nisa. Maybe the reason why we don't lend her credibility here is simply because we could turn to her and say, listen, the same way that you miraculously escaped the smoke and the fire, maybe your husband did too, and you just didn't realize it. So it's the same idea, that she's going to try and rationalize her way out of this, but it could very easily be that the husband survived. Okay.